Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Brent Thurston Lassiter, and I'm running for the State Senate District 11.
And?
I'm Tyler McCall, running for State Representative in the 13th District.
Very good. A little bit different here during campaign season. Two guys who hope to be in Jeff City next fall. Let's play the open. Welcome to the production studio here at KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison, and I am here with Tyler McCall, a Democrat from Parkville, and Brent Thurston Lassiter, a Republican from Independence. They're both seeking office. We should mention here in the midst of campaign season that we actually did invite their opponents. In Tyler's case, that's Representative Nick Marshall. And in Brent's case, that's Representative John Rizzo, who's also seeking that Senate seat. Neither of them responded to our invitations by phone or email or social media over the last month or two. So we're talking to these two instead. We're glad you guys are here. Let me start with you, Brent. Help us get to know you a little bit. Tell us about your family and pets.
Well, I have been married for 36 years, and I have two married children, two grandsons, no pets.
No pets.
The grandsons are 10 and 4.
And tell us what you do for a living.
I drive an 18-wheeler. I've done that for the last 35 years.
And where do you drive it?
Pretty much all of Missouri. Sometimes I'll drive up to Iowa and back, into Kansas a lot, and that's about it.
So this is not your first run for office. In fact, you have served a term in the Missouri House of Representatives. You ran first in 2006 and again in 2008. You were elected in 2010, served a term. After being defeated in 2012, you ran again in 2014 and lost. So here you are on the ballot in 2016. I think the question a lot of people would ask is why so many runs for office from you?
Because I have a feel for the community. I still have not gotten to serve as long as I wanted to for the people. There's a large segment of people that are not being represented right now, and I feel like I'm capable of representing all of them. They need to get to know me well enough to realize that.
Who is it who's not being represented?
Well, it would be the conservative side. You know, right now you know that we are being dominated by the Democrats that got all the statewide sweep on us that one year, and they've been controlling most of everything. I'm not saying that it's real high praises for the Republican Party and everything, but I'm thinking it's time for a change, that there's a certain percentage of people that they feel like that they can't go to their representative right now because they don't have the same worldview.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear you say that, given that Republicans have 116 of the seats in the state House. I can't remember the number in the Senate, but it's a super majority in both places. They were able to override the governor's vetoes almost at will just a couple of weeks ago. And yet you feel like conservative voices are not represented.
Well, because there are a certain segment of conservative representatives that are still not sticking to our platform and the way that we have a view of the world. That's why.
I see.
And when you have somebody that actually has a feel for the people, that's going to be out in the middle of them at the ground level, I would say, as a working man, I can see that a lot better than somebody that would be a lawyer or, you know, always been white collar and that wouldn't even take the time to do that.
When you did win a seat in 2010 and you served in the House for 2 years, you were outspent in that campaign. One article I read said your opponent raised $30,000 and you raised something around $500 in that campaign. Were you surprised when you won?
It was a shock, really, but I knew I'd done a lot of hard work, and that's what I'm known for, is hard work and my tenacious attitude towards things that can't be gotten. I go after them. Rather, you know, the party, they were hands off. You know, they look at numbers and they say it's impossible. I never look at impossible, you know, and a lot of prayer goes into that too. I have, you know, deep Christian views, and, you know, I can't go daily without that.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that if it's right, it'll happen.
So when you did win that term and started serving in 2011, what was that like? Was that as rewarding and fulfilling as you hoped it would be?
Well, while I was in Jeff City, that wasn't so rewarding. In fact, I was kind of the sickest I've ever been because there's so much closed in contact with the people just there in the Capitol, a lot
kind
of germs.
Kind of a bubble. Oh,
yeah.
You mean physically sick?
Yeah, physically. And then later on, I learned how boring committee meetings could be, how boring watching everybody do their little games they play on the floor. What I enjoyed the most was when I came back to where I live. And, you know, I'm your neighbor, mm-hmm. you know.
And why was that the best part? What was it about being at home while you were serving as a representative that was so great?
Because they knew that if they needed something, I'm going to go right to the source for them. And they had a new confidence that they actually really had a representative.
Mm-hmm. So you served for 2 years. You served those people. And then 2 years later, they voted you out.
Yep. It was a real close one on that. I don't think I worked as hard on trying to defend it, and I paid the price for that.
Did it hurt?
Oh, yeah, it did. I felt like it was just something I had worked so hard for and then just lost that quick. But I've learned since then that that's politics. You know, it's every 2 years in that case. It's whatever the people perceive, they are the ones that are making the decisions. And you don't know what kind of decision the public's going to be making next time around.
Why did you decide to run this time for the Senate seat instead of for the House again?
Well, the number one reason is we haven't been having an opponent for our side in this race since, I think, 2004. And
you were unopposed as a Republican to be the Republican nominee this time.
Right.
Yeah.
And, there's not very many people that wanted to step up to the plate for this particular seat. Because like I said before, they look at the numbers and they get scared. And they run off and say, oh, no, that's not worth our time. That's not worth our money.
And the numbers you mean are the numbers of campaign contributions to your opponent?
They're looking at polling numbers.
I see.
And I don't know necessarily if they even got to the point of the money part at all, you know.
The polling numbers, meaning you think this is a Democratic-leaning Senate district.
Well, it generally has been. But like I said before, I don't look at that. There's a lot of narratives in the district that's not being accounted for when you poll. There's groups out there that I'm in contact with that my opponent will never see. I've been endorsed by the Freedom of the Road Riders. That's a motorcycle. They have chapters. They're very law-abiding citizens. They're very active legislatively, and there's many of them. And I don't think my opponent would even talk to the motorcycle people because they don't fit his demeanor.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you to sit tight for a second here while we talk to our other guest today, Tyler McCall, who is a Democrat from Parkville. He's challenging Representative Nick Marshall for the 13th District seat. Tyler, tell us about you. Any family and pets you want to report?
Yeah, well, I no pets, but that's not really by choice. That's more my apartment does not allow pets.
Right.
I hope to change that down in Jeff City. I would definitely
it's good
have
to
a,
know your legislative priorities.
Yeah, my priorities are allowing myself a dog, first off. No,
I
would probably have one if that wasn't the case, though.
Someday.
Yeah.
And what do you do for a living, Tom?
I roast coffee a few years back up in north of the river in Parkville with my business partner. I started Parkville Coffee. We import green coffee beans kind of from all around the world and sell them around North Kansas City and north of the river.
And full disclosure for our listeners, I've actually known Tyler for many years when I also lived and worked up in Parkville, and have had many a cup of coffee that Tyler has roasted. So I disclose that, and you can all do with that information what you will in analyzing my questions. Tyler, you, unlike Representative Lassiter, have never served in the General Assembly, and yet something motivated you to get in the paperwork and start campaigning for this office. What was it?
Well, it did, and it was really interesting listening to him because while we're on separate sides of the aisle, we have very kind of parallel situations in our districts. I come from a district that's predominantly and historically quite more Republican and quite a bit more red district. And what motivated me was somewhat similar situation. I noticed that there was very frequently unopposed elections, you know, no options on the ballot. And I kind of feel like there's no way to really have accountability on either side of the aisle when you don't have options. And when you have people down there that are running unopposed and kind of know that they – you mentioned you felt like you didn't work as hard the second time after you got it. And whether or not that was a conscious decision, I think people just get comfortable and they feel like they don't have to stay involved in the community. And you may have still been going out there. I'm sure you were. But there's a lot of them that you'll talk to people in their districts, and it's been years since they've heard from the representative, and they'll still go unopposed. So that was a large factor in me deciding to run was to give people an option.
It sounds like when you say things like give people an option, it almost sounds like there's an element of, I don't want to say defeatism in that, but sort of a sense of, well, it's not about winning, it's about having an option. Am I hearing that right?
I don't want to say defeatism because that makes it sound like I'm all right with defeat, I feel like, but it does start with giving people that option. And I think it's more important than winning continuing that, because there's going to be another race 2 years from now. And when you go 4 years, 6 years, he was talking about it going to 2004 since they'd had someone on the ballot. It's really hard to get back into the cycle of having people on the ballot after that long. So it might be a loss this time, but it's kind of, you know, win the war, lose the battle kind of thing.
Up to this point, what's been your involvement in politics?
As a younger student, I was involved in, volunteering for some campaigns and walking door to door, and I've always taken an interest in it, you know, in my reading and what I listen to. It's always been high up there. And also, you know, being a small business owner, it you see things going on in the community. You have kind of a day-to-day involvement with people, and it's hard to stay away from it. It's hard not to realize how much government and how much these things affect your day-to-day life.
A lot of the familiar expression that all politics is local, and aware very much that sometimes local politics are the most complex and nastiest. I don't know if that's if we can say that anymore, given the current national political realm. But
they're also the most ignored, though. They're the most important. That's where politics start. You know, we need people running for aldermen. We need people running, you know, at the most local level and for your state representatives. And that's where you kind of get the most apathy. It's hard to get people excited about that, excited about those races.
Why do you think you are more prepared for this than the incumbent, who obviously has, at the very least, has the experience of serving there in mm-hmm. Jeff City?
Well, I mean, I've joked around a lot that I find it interesting that out of my district, where we'll have over 20,000 people vote and there's, you know, 30,000-40,000 people living, that in the past, I guess, 4 years, there's only been one person until now to run for, you know, the state representative seat. There are a lot more people in my district that have the ideas and the passion. We just need to motivate people, you know, back to an environment where running for office is something to strive for. It's giving back to your community. It's being involved in your community so you can make a difference. I think that I am the better person and the person to vote for because I want to do the job and because I'm here ready to do this. I have the energy and the passion and the ideas, but I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to go out there, you know, go to the Platte County Health Forums and our poverty summits, be involved in the community to find out what the actual issues are. And I think that right there, having an open ear, it goes a very long way. He was talking, I feel like there's a environment down in Jeff City where if you go against your party, you know, you'll be primaried out. If you don't toe the line, you face a level of scrutiny that I worry contributes to the environment that, you know, just continues to keep people divided. You should be able to work with people across the aisle. And I think if you're not willing to, you should take a hard look in the mirror to see if there's any issues where you can. I Kevin Corley, who's the representative in the 14th district, I was at a forum about a month ago, and he was talking about I-70 and working on infrastructure improvements and issues like that. Everyone knows, right or left, that there are things that have to be done on issues like this, and we need to find people that are willing to work together.
So how are you campaigning? I mean, what are you doing to get yourself out there as the certainly less familiar name than to the constituents of that district?
Any opportunity I can find, I'm just trying to take. Attending things like this, we've had a lot of opportunities in Platte County. Like I mentioned, the Platte County Poverty Summit, we just had the first annual one at the YMCA up north and had a lot of local groups that are involved in the community have that groundwork and know what's going on. And then just going door to door, trying to find out, you know, talk to as many people as I can. I loved hearing what he said, that he won with $500 to $30,000, because that gave me so much confidence and hope moving forward. Because I always knew that was going to be the situation I was in.
What is the situation? What's your fundraising
differential? Mine's not quite that strong of a difference. We're at about a little under half of what he's – or a little over half of what he's raised. But what's nice is I went into it knowing that. We were going to have to knock on doors. We were going to have, you know, a grassroots involvement, have people, you know, talking to their neighbors. That's how we were going to get our message out there. It wasn't going to be through, you know, television. It wasn't going to be blasting money into our district.
I want to ask both of you. You both are running for these seats as I think it's fair to say outsiders. So even though you have served a term, Brent, in the legislature, you still are running as someone who's sort of not part of the political establishment. Who advises you? Where are you getting your guidance? How do you know how to do this? Brent Lassiter?
I tend to surround myself with people that are good at whatever subject I'm tackling. I don't presume to know everything, which I'd be a fool to say that I did know everything. I don't. If it has to do with the building industry, my best friend's in that. If it has to be medical, my wife knows all about the medical. Just a couple examples. The advice I get is basically family and the friends that I trust the most. I don't have any input, really, from our party. You said I was an outsider. I kind of like the term of I'm more independent-minded.
All right.
I think for myself. When you're in the House, I always tell people what it's like. It's like you're a herd of cattle. And, you know, they kind of corral you in. You're in the caucus. This is what we're doing. Well, I don't always agree with this is what we're doing. And the Senate, I explain to people, it's like you're an individual country. You go in there. And I like that fit for me because that's the way my mind thinks.
I have heard something similar from people who have served in both places, that just how very different the two chambers are. Who have you surrounded yourself with, Tyler?
It's definitely a close group of family and friends and people that I know. I love the idea of having, you know, one of my best friends is a nurse, another very good friend of mine is a teacher, and I talk to them. They have those, they know kind of the issues that are going on in there, and I trust their opinions.
But are they political experts?
They're political experts sometimes. If I go policy, you know, my father is a very close confidant of mine, and we definitely have many a conversations on those kind of issues. I don't have a campaign manager. I don't have someone advising me that might change, you know, once I'm in the state house. But I kind of like the idea of not having someone give you the political background of an issue first before finding out, you know, the reality of the issue. The teachers are going to actually maybe know what's going to affect the school a little more if you start there than with the politicians. So
can I add something?
Please.
None of the people I mentioned are political geniuses or anything like you said. I do a lot of self-study also. You know, I do a lot of reading. I keep up with what's going on day to day, every day. And I feel like I keep my mind sharp that way.
Would it be brown-nosing to say I get a lot of my political information from KCUR?
Well, it might be brown-nosing, but we accept that. gladly hear it.
No, I mean, I do. I absolutely love podcasts. I would be lost without my iPhone. But getting information like that, you know, I love NPR politics. I love a lot of sources like that because it you can diversify where you're getting your information from a lot better than just having like one cable news channel or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So you both are out there on the campaign trail. You're both talking to lots of potential voters. If you had to sort of identify the top two or three things that you're hearing right now, what is it?
Well, the health care everybody's suffering for. In fact, I just got a phone call this morning from my sister-in-law, and she says, my health care is going up again. What am I going to do? She's on a fixed income. There are a lot of people struggling, and I frankly don't know what they're going to do to afford this high price of health care.
Would you support expanding Medicaid availability in Missouri?
That has to – I can't blanketly say I would do that unless there was some things put into that. I think that the level of qualification should be raised. You know, for the ones that would drop out of it, they should be able to stay in it because the economy designates that.
Mm-hmm.
To expand it, I think it naturally expands when there's more and more people going into it all mm-hmm. the time. I don't believe that people on these government programs should not be drug tested. They should not be getting these if they're going to abuse the privilege.
How about you, Tyler? What's something you're hearing from voters?
Well, I will say I do support Medicaid expansion. I think that we can surely find ways to improve it, and I'm not giving a blanket statement by any means, but something has to be done, and there are way too many people in that coverage gap right now. I happen to come from a district, though, where, you know, the issues are quite a bit different. You know, mm-hmm. we have one of the lowest poverty ratings, if not the lowest poverty rating in the state. We have a fantastic school district with the Park Hill School District. So our issues change, but the view of poverty or the type of poverty that we deal with and the issues we deal with are just slightly different. You know, we still have kids going hungry. And if you're in that small percentage of kids going hungry, that's 100% of you that's in poverty. So we have ways to definitely bring people up like that. I have a lot of people who in my district worry very much about kind of ethics reform down in Jeff City and just kind of the environment down there. You know, there is very little accountability down in Jefferson City, and a lot of people don't feel like they're being represented, and it's not even just on certain viewpoints. They just feel like a lot of people down in Jefferson City have their own agenda, and that's kind of what.
And do you feel like that's something you would be able to do something about as a first-term legislator?
I don't expect by any means to go down in Jefferson City and revolutionize, you know, all 160 members of the House of Representatives. What I think it does take, though, is people starting to vote, people starting to hold the representatives accountable, listen, watch their voting records, pay attention, make sure they're involved in the community, and one by one, each one of these districts, bring Jefferson City back that way. I'm going to be a voice of accountability for my district, and I'm going to be one more vote down there that will hopefully, you know, bring us back to a more reasonable environment.
Ethics reform always seems to be on the agenda the last many terms, probably including when you were there before, Brent. What would you do if you could write the law for ethics reform?
Wow. You know, I myself have not had a problem with the ethics. In fact, you know, the big news articles we always hear about, he accepted lobbyist gifts and all that. I didn't have anything on my record the whole time. I had $5 on there, and that was my LA's deal. She did something, and there was $5.
Your legislative assistant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in order to see where the real problem is with ethics, it'd have to be investigated before I could just say, how would I do it? That's the first step. You have to review, you have to read, you have to investigate in order to have a good decision on that. But I do think that just on the overall, there is some reform that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, do you have a particular reform plan in mind?
What I will say is that in addition to having a severe lack of campaign finance limits in this state, there are other issues going down in Jefferson City that need attention placed on them. I don't know how much, you know, attention will come to this specific issue, but I'm sure it's going to have a lot talked about it over the next few weeks. But just yesterday, Cora Faith Walker wrote a letter to a few of the House leadership in our state, accusing another incoming member of the legislature of raping her. And I hope that this is addressed. I hope that we have serious attention placed to this, but this is not the first time in our legislature that we have had issues like this take place. Just in the past year, we've had multiple people resign. There is an environment down there that has to be addressed, and I think that that goes along with the ethics issue just as much. I mean, it's...
Well, that also includes the open seat that I'm going for, as that was one of the examples of what he's mentioning, that there was some problems there.
Well, the seat that is now vacant,
yes,
because of a problem.
Right.
Right.
On both sides of the aisle, we've had problems. And, you know, I don't think that one legislator, I won't mention anybody's names, suggested that the women should dress more appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that suggests to me that the men can't help themselves, mm-hmm, and it's the woman's fault. That's a blame the victim mentality, and I'm totally opposed to that. You know, men need to be gentlemen. They need to come and do their job, and that's it, you know?
Right. So what you guys are raising is something that has been raised before, that there's this culture in Jefferson City that enables, whether it be sexist treatment of interns or even of other representatives.
Claire McCaskill talked about this happening decades ago.
Right. She wrote about this in her book, about how some of her earliest experiences in politics involved her being treated differently and wrongly as a woman. So I guess the question is, for anyone who is seeking to go in there as a new voice or as an independent voice, what can you realistically do to change a culture that is deeply ingrained in a place?
I personally would never be alone in the office with a female.
So take some steps on your own to sort of set boundaries.
But I'd also suggest to the leadership to make those rules for every legislator. You can't be in the office, you know, like the closed in, you don't close the door with the female or the male, whichever way it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Always have somebody around you. You come out of your office to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's just simple things to keep the view of what you're doing out in the open.
You guys feel like that's a change that you're capable of effecting?
I think I can.
We need to have an environment where, you know, one of the things I saw that they were trying to push through, or it may have been pushed through last year through some of the ethics reform on this issue, was that there would be more I forget what the specific name is, but the reporters there, they have to report something if someone comes to them.
Mandatory
reporters. And one of the problems with this, and where it stemmed from, was them not necessarily listening to the survivors of these types of attacks or abuses. The environment that creates is that when you go to someone in confidence, you don't know that they're going to keep it in confidence until you're ready to talk about this or to move this forward. So a lot of times where I think that these issues need to be started is talking to survivors of these types of attacks and finding out what might have made their situation better, or what they might have been able to go to, what would have made them comfortable to talk about this or to bring forward. And not just having mandatory reporters, but if you do see something or you do know something's going on, not somebody came to you in confidence, but you see something, you know something, that's when you say something.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't have to be mandatory reporter. If something's wrong, have the courage to stand up.
And I think as a legislator, too, I think it would be your duty to tell that other legislator he's wrong. Mm-hmm. Point it out right then. It doesn't matter what kind of flack he's going to give you, but you're going to put it to light real quick.
So I want to ask you guys a couple of other questions here. One is that you are running in one of the most contentious campaigns that every campaign is contentious in its own way, but this year's seems unusually so. The top line campaigns on the Missouri ballot for president and for governor both have a high degree of conflict, and both I think have the potential to affect the down ballot races, including yours. How do you, Tyler, you as a Democrat, recognizing what's going on in the Trump-Clinton race, mm-hmm. recognizing what's happening in the Greitens-Koster race, and you, Brent, as a Republican, how do you feel like those top-line races are affecting your campaign? Will it affect the outcome of your race, and what do you do about that, Tyler?
I don't know ultimately if it will, but I will say I look at it, you know, it's something to keep your eye on and kind of use it, because, you know, I'm not in a race where I'm going to be doing polling. We're not going to, you know, be calling people and finding out who they plan on voting for. So it's nice to kind of get a idea of where the state's going and see if you can trickle that down and figure out what's going to happen in your district.
But you live in a primarily, predominantly Republican district, at least a majority Republican yeah. district, but one where perhaps Donald Trump, many people thought, would be a drag mm-hmm. on Republicans down the ballot.
I expect Donald Trump to probably win my district, and I also think that Koster could possibly win my district. So those two things are kind of pulling at each other and balancing out any negative feelings or positive feelings. If Koster was also down 10 points, I would probably look at that as a sign I was going to have a very rough November 8th for my personal election. Donald Trump being up and Koster being up, I feel like balances that out. I'm not it's going to be an interesting
right.
interesting election.
Koster up 16 points statewide in the last poll.
However, Trump may be popular and throughout all of Missouri, but they're not necessarily Republican voters that are going for Trump. Just because you see a Trump sign in a yard doesn't mm-hmm. mean they're going to down ballot vote. Mm. Mm. Same with Koster. I've talked to a lot of Republicans that say, well, Koster's got it, you know, and they know Koster's record, and some reason they like all of that. Greitens is fairly new to the scene. They don't know a whole lot about him. So I know my side's not going to like this, but I do feel like Koster will probably take that.
I love the idea of having politicians or races that force people to split their ballots. That's,
yeah.
You should never vote 100% down
no.
the ballot.
Brent, would you support Chris Koster?
No, I'm not going to, because I am loyal to my platform.
Uh-huh. And so are you supporting Donald Trump as well?
Yes, I am. Trump is a regular, well, not, I can't say regular because he's really rich and all that, but business-minded. Regular type person, not a past politician or a past actor or whatever, you know. And he does spout it out, and some people don't like that. But then there's other people that appreciate they know where he's coming from. Mm. He does go overboard. I don't appreciate the overboardness, but I do appreciate the honesty.
Tyler, you're an outsider running for this office. Are you supporting Donald Trump or Eric Greitens?
I am not supporting Donald Trump or Eric Greitens. And on the issue of changing the culture in Jefferson City and nationwide, I'm not sure that Donald Trump, when you talk about the things that are over the top, I'm not sure that's the kind of direction we need to go if we want to change the culture into a positive direction.
One last question for each of you. There is some reason to suspect you may not win in your respective races. If that happens, what's next for you? Will you be on another ballot in 2 years, Brent Lassiter?
Well, right now I don't see what ballot that would be. In the meantime, I have a fantastic job. I'm very relaxed in this campaign. You know, if I don't get it, okay, I guess it was meant to be. If I get it, great. And then I can continue working in the public.
Tyler, is this the first and last race for Tyler McCall, or will there be something else?
I hope not. You know, I loved what he said earlier about feeling like he hadn't been given the time to serve fully yet. He had more to give. And that's kind of how I feel. I would, if 8 years from now, if I am elected in November and I had the chance to serve 8 years, that would be the most incredible thing in the world. But if I do lose, my opponent terms out. This will be his last term. So there will be an open seat in 2018. So that's a possibility. And I'd also love to just look at, you know, maybe some closer things. There's a lot of alderman races, committeeman races. I'd love to get involved somehow.
Very good. Well, Representative, former Representative Brent Thurston Lassiter, Republican from Independence, running for the 11th District Senate seat, and Tyler McCall, Democrat from Parkville, running for the 13th District House seat. Thank you both for being here today.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And I have one last question. We always end our podcast with music chosen by our guest. And since there's two of you today, you each get to make a proposal for our closing music. And I get to choose which one I like better. So
I like Freebird.
He's already got a choice. Brent came
prepared. It's in
prepared.
My head.
So you are choosing Freebird, which mm-hmm. is, I think, I'm going to say an old standby around here. So, but it starts at a high level. So Tyler really is going to have to be very impressive to outpick Freebird. Tyler McCall, what's your choice?
Oh, man, that's hard. I got to pick a single song. I'm going to go with Cold War by Janelle Monae. She's a local girl. She came out of Kansas City, Kansas. And I think the focus of the song and what it's about is really kind of poignant and still relevant today.
You know, now people are going to think I'm biased because I've known Tyler for a while, but I've heard Freebird before. I don't know Cold War, but I want to. So we're going to go with Cold War to end. Is that all right, Brent?
Yeah.
No objection. Okay. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Thanks again to both of you. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. Remember, you can find us on iTunes at Statehouse Blend Missouri. And we hope you'll subscribe, by the way. We're now a separate feed on iTunes from Statehouse Blend Kansas. You can also always get us online at kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, that's a great way to keep up on the show and on the news from Jeff City and Topeka. I'm at PTS Brian. You can follow the total depravity of Kansas politics and my co-host Sam Zeff over on Statehouse Blend Kansas. He's at Sam Zeff. We try to use the hashtag Statehouse Blend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings. On Up to Date on KCUR 89.3 at 11 a.m. If you have any other thoughts on the program, you can write to me at brian@kcur.org. Tune in again next time. Take care.